You're listening to a recording of the Open Society Foundations, working to build vibrant and tolerant democracies worldwide. Visit us at soros.org.
Established in 2002, Grupa Spomenik, in their work, creates a public space for a political and critical discussions of the Balkan Wars of the 1990s and their consequences. The group, Grupa Spomenik, enables artists, theorists, and activists from Bosnia and Herzegovina and Serbia to collaborate outside of dominant protocols of international organizations, European cultural policies, interstate cooperation, and cooperation on how to enact emancipatory gestures in the fields of arts and theory and make positive impact on everyday life of the citizens. It is very important to underline that each participant of Grupa Spomenik in its previous individual artistic or theoretical work is extremely engaged in practice of intercultural dialogue working without making trendy or politically correct projects. Working in difficult territories like, for instance, Kosovo, or bringing Kosovo artists to Belgrade, or dealing with state terrorism, they're living and experiencing cultural diversity from its dangerous side in xenophobic environments. When reinvesting history, as for instance in their project Politics of Memory, they're contributing in large extent to the self-perception of different Balkan societies on their embedded multiculturalism and historical and contemporary considerations. The importance of such projects lies in its uniqueness, in its courage to tell the different Balkan societies, and especially the Serbian society, the truth they do not want to see, feel, understand, or even less to take responsibility for. Positioning their debates and artwork in the focus of different art scenes and presentations, going against the stream, risking to stay excluded in future from dominant mainstream exhibiting practices, this group has shown how important it is to contextualize artistic position within its own society. The members of Grupa Spomenik are Ana Bežić, Jasmina Husanović, Pavle Levi, Jelena Petrović, and present today, Branimir Stojanović, Damir Arsenijević, and Milica Tomić. Before I give them the mic, just a couple of words who actually they are. And Damir Arsenijević is a cultural theorist and critic. He received his PhD in literature and cultural studies from the Montfort University in the UK. He's a lecturer in English literature and culture at Tuzla University in Bosnia and Herzegovina. He has participated in and coordinated several collaborative and international projects, mainly working on genocide issue. He is the member of Monument Group since 2008. Branimir Stojanović, philosopher, psychoanalyst, and artist, is a member of the Belgrade Psychoanalytic Society, chief editor of the library bulletin Belgrade Psychoanalytical Society magazine, and a founder of the School of History and Theory of Images. He is the editor of the Gay Science book edition and founder of Prelom, Break magazine. Stojanović published numerous articles, essays, and studies in many periodicals. He is the founding member of the Grupa Spomenik since 2002. Milica Tomić is a visual artist and the PhD candidate, Department of Interdisciplinary Studies, Multimedia Art, University of Art in Belgrade. Tomić's work centers on issues of political violence, nationality, and identity, with particular attention to the tensions between personal experience and media-constructed images. She exhibited in a wide international context since 1997 and participated in numerous exhibitions including Sao Paulo, Venice, Istanbul, Sydney, Prague, Gyumri, Biennales. She's a visiting lecturer at international institutions in Helsinki, Rotterdam, Vienna, and Berlin. I welcome them to Open Society Foundation, and the floor is yours. Thank you.
Hello, everybody. Thank you very much, Becca, for that wonderful introduction. And it's a great pleasure to welcome you all to this presentation on behalf of myself and Grupa Spominic. I'm going to give you a quick overview of what we are going to do today, then put some common parameters, and then we'll move on. So we've envisaged this presentation to be in two parts. The first part is going to be around 40 minutes, after which we're going to have a short break, and then we'll go on to the second part of our presentation, and then we will have some time for questions. So I'm going to start by saying that our arrival here is part of the joint work on the forensic aesthetic that was, as Becca said, organized here by the Release Center for Art and Politics of the New School and Cabinet Magazine, together with Bard College and Goldsmiths from London. What does that mean? Well, the main question is if the second third of the 20th century signaled the dominance of the witness in popular consciousness and memory. We have something like the era of the witness. We have now, after the wars, and during and after the wars in Yugoslavia, have something new, and that's a shift towards forensics. And this shift is a move from the human voice, human testimony, onto the objects, and science in particular. So the question is, what is this shift signaling, this shift to science? Well, this shift to science not only signals problems with representation and relationships, various relationships between objects and people. It signals also the new era of governmentality, which is very important, and how the forensics science and science in general is now participating in a heavy-duty way into the models, into developing the models and sustaining the models of governmentality. Now, the forensic aesthetics tries to unpack these relationships to see how objects themselves function. So what Grupa Spominic is doing is ushering in something called Studio Jugoslavia or Yugoslav Studies. And these studies are important for two reasons. First, they differ from any sort of national area studies, precisely because Yugoslavia doesn't exist anymore. Or actually, it exists only spectrally. So we cannot write a linear, neat history of Yugoslavia, but we can only write about all these problems and conjunctures that appear with the arrival of the forensics in this area. So Yugoslav Studies actually questions all models of governmentality. And how do these studies do that? They do that particularly by identifying commonplaces or tropes of how some sort of terror is perpetuated still in Yugoslavia, and actually also on a world scale, starting from something that we call permanent war, that is the characteristic of the war today, through the whole notion of the camp, living dead camp, that's become the trope and the model of this governmentality, to the questions of unidentified and who the unidentified are today in the world, and returning to the questions, what do we call war today? So Yugoslav Studies is precisely at the juncture where theory, arts, and school, these three components merge to question all the models of governmentality and to produce new ways of thinking about them and potentially enacting new ways of being. Now I'm going to turn to Milica, who's going to continue this presentation.
First of all, my voice is broken, so don't take this as a... I'm really sorry, but I will try my best. So thank you for coming. I know that it's Monday, and I really appreciate that you're here with us. And I'm thankful that we have an opportunity here. And thank you for our hosts. It's really, for me, it's really fantastic to be here, because actually we are, I as an artist also, I'm from the early beginning of my production, I'm very connected with the Open Society Foundation that was very active in Serbia and in former Yugoslavia. So it's some kind of poetic justice that we are here. So I will give just a short introduction into the work of Grupa Spomenik. So a very important moment is that Grupa Spomenik was created as a response to the public call that was announced in 2002 after the changes and after the war in the 90s. And it was when the city of Belgrade proposed to the artist to send their proposals to design a monument dedicated to the wars waged in the 90s in former Yugoslavia. So the public call was titled A Memorial to the Fallen Fighters and Victims Killed in the Course of the Wars in the 90s till 99, including the victims of NATO bombing campaign on the whole territory of former Yugoslavia. For us, this was a very important moment, how to, let's say, we were really felt interpolated, and we thought that this will be a very good moment, because it was the first time that the state politics, that the state actually invited artists to produce something which is, that is connected, that connects actually art and politics, and that it is coming from inside, let's say, from the state itself. And our first task was actually to open up all the questions and this conglomerate of politics and ideologies standing behind this very confused, let's say, public call. I'm not going to go very deeply into these questions. We can later talk about this. But our first action was actually to cancel this public call. Our proposal was actually to cancel the public call and to initiate a project to create a public monument in a medium of discourse. So this was our proposal, and we are still doing this in different forms and ways. We are in a field of art, but we are a group that is... sorry, I have to work on... So the group, from the very beginning, was working on the production of the public spaces for a political, a critical ideological discussion of the wars of the 90s, their consequences, and actually about post-war collectives that stands beyond national and ethnical division. But then, not through the models, which was very important for us, not reconciliation between the subjects, but rather whereby each entity defines his or her own political position. Today, Grupa Spomenik is, let's say, a collective of artists, anthropologists, psychoanalysts, theorists of culture and literature, from Belgrade, Zagreb, Tuzla, Rijeka, Ljubljana, and so on. So we are some of us are also living in Palo Alto, for example, at Stanford University. So what we are doing, we are establishing relation between war crime, genocide and a positive emancipatory Yugoslav politics and praxis. So using different strategies in art, so we try to rearticulate its importance in a post-genocide society. And our main topic today is a genocide in Srebrenica, and we believe also that the genocide is fully speakable, but that the politics and the critique of ideology are the only proper language that we can use for this, that can be spoken. So focusing on the Srebrenica genocide, we examine the conditions under which art can produce its own discourse on the genocide and the contemporary permanent war. Then we think about actually the global situation at the same time. For that reason, I would like very much to present you a piece, a work, a project that I started in 2004. And this will be very shortly because this will be some kind of an introduction into the Grupa Spomenik methods and way of working. But it all will also be a very important link to Yugoslav studies. And the project of Grupa Spomenik called What is the Name of the War Today? So the Container Project is a reconstruction of crime that I started in 2004. And I started actually together with Branimir Stojanović after we actually saw an announcement, a text in the news in the newspaper that was about the crime that was committed in northern Afghanistan in 2001. Where we came to the point that it was that there was no image of this crime. No image of this crime appeared in the media. I will just shortly say the crime was actually committed in 2001 in northern Afghanistan, and when the thousands of Taliban prisoners were loaded into the containers and were shipped through the desert, through Mazar-i-Sharif, to the Shebergam prison. And in the way to the desert, they were screaming for air. And in one moment, the Northern Alliance, that was actually controlled by the US Army, riddled into the containers after they said in order to give air condition. The fact that not a single image of the crime appeared in the media was for us very significant. Actually, the Physicians for Human Rights were the first who started to work on this. But Branimir suggested that it could be a very good moment for us to think actually, and maybe to produce a newspaper on a theme of the permanent war. So, and that the image that does not exist could be the visual of the newspaper. So we started to work on it, and the idea was actually first to produce this image of this non-existing image, actually, of the real event. And we had to go actually through the whole reconstruction of the crime that happened, and we have done this in Serbia. So we were in Belgrade, and we bought a container. And the first reconstruction that took place in Serbia was let's say we had to get a shooting service, and we got the shooting service in a police club in the sports club called Policeman. So this was the only place where we could do this. Maybe I should go a bit faster through all this, but we produced some photos, but actually what was even more important for us, we never produced this newspaper. But in the moment when we had the photographs, that I'm not going to show you now, we decided actually to take the photos away. And our first, let's say, also the reason that we started this was Alain Badiou, a French philosopher, distinction on the images that appear in the war, that he also calls war of the images, where he says that there are three categories of images. The one category are the images that never... that both reviling sides are using. The second are those that the just warring side, one of the warring sides are using it. And the third is actually are the images that nobody uses, that they never appear. When we decided not to use, I mean, actually in the moment when I decided not to use the images anymore, this was an important moment because behind all these images, was much valuable material. And actually, by doing this reconstruction and by moving the photographs, the possibility opened to follow the process of a reconstruction. And by tracing back each object that appears in the reconstruction and during the reconstruction, the history of each object, agent, person appearing there, we had... So, of the crime that happened somewhere else in northern Afghanistan by doing the reconstruction in Serbia, we had an opportunity to make visible a network of military, economic, and political relations that appeared active during the process of a reconstruction, and they began to tell us its own criminal story. So we realized, actually, that the shooters were at the same time shooters, sportsmen, and policemen, and military people, and that they actually are still in the, let's say, in the military, in the policemen, and that they were at the same time people who waged war during the 90s. We had to use, actually, a Kalashnikov. We had to use, a weapon, an impact enough intensity to go to the thick, container metal. And we also used a bullet, which was 7.62-39 millimeter. So, by tracing back the history of this bullet, we came actually to the point that the bullet was produced in 88 in former Yugoslavia in Bosnia, and that right after that, in 89, they were shipped to Kosovo, where actually the war, we could say, started with the first massacre that happened there in 89. And then actually, this serial of bullets that we were using for this shooting, for the reconstruction, was actually used all the time till 1999, when the Yugoslav army retreated from Kosovo and they were shipped to Belgrade. And these were these bullets. We could also say that these bullets are those that were used also when the Albanian citizens from Kosovo were killed and also loaded into the freezing containers and then dumped into the Danube River. So we were confronted with a series of questions with the origin of the bullets, etc., and all the whole story behind. So the fact we have reconstructed the crime in the new setting and giving up the photography, the representation, we achieved the insight that during the crime reconstruction in Belgrade, another crime became slowly visible and fully real, the material of crimes committed during the wars in the 90s. But then, actually, repeating the crime in different situations, for example, in Australia, I have done this for the Sydney Biennale. We reconstructed the crime in near Sydney on the Blue Mountain. So what happened there was that the only professionals were those who accepted to do shooting, and it could happen, and there were kangaroo shooters, but in Australia it was possible only to perform on the private property. And hiring private professional forces, let's say, who can do this, it was very, let's say, reciprocal to the main contribution of the modern permanent war on terror and this new form of the war that actually that is about privatization of the war and the subject of outsourcing. So renting private people to wage war, private agencies, like, for example, Blackwater, who are actually security in the war in Iraq and Afghanistan, and also the appearance of the private prisons were actually the result of a quite complex, results and the process that happened in Australia. I'm not going to go deeply now into all, just to say something very simply about the results. And also the bullets that we were using, these were the bullets that were used in fighting the US-led war in Iraq, but of the Australian army. The reconstruction that found place in Armenia, because it was also done there, in Gyumri, we were faced with the total weapon ban. This is also, and actually, that people who were living in the containers from the time of the late 80s when the big earthquake happened, and but the point of the total who were living for already 20 years, because the earthquake happened just year before the dissolution of Soviet Union. So Armenia was, didn't have any capacity of any kind of reconstruction of their structure. So there was no interest actually of Soviet. There were no. They couldn't recuperate actually their infrastructures. So still after 20 years they were living there, and the container became got some another, let's say, meaning in this situation. So in Great Britain, this work was only possible within the BBC studios production. Or another option was actually to import the container and then to show it in Great Britain. It was impossible to perforate it in Britain. Just to go back, so this artwork and the reconstruction actually tests relations and constructs actually some, or makes visible the military, economic, and political network of relations which produce violence, and also shows, the ways which this local network participates in the global politics of the war. And shows, it's some kind of a litmus paper that shows how is a certain state engaged in the war that is actually happening today, and questions what stands behind this war. That is also a very big theme of Grupa Spomenik and the Yugoslav studies. So we can also say, because what I said about representation, that actually container could be understood as photography by other means, and as an object of a process of a reconstruction that could be an index of the war today. So now back to Grupa Spomenik. So after the end of Bosnian War, the remains of the victims and genocidal massacre around the town of Srebrenica have been exhumed, identified via forensic analysis, and reburied in accordance to the victims' Islamic religious traditions. So this process of reassociation, undertaken by the International Commission of Missing Persons, ICMP, is a crucial component of an assemble of practices, institutions, and ideologies that are normative in global post-conflict recovery. So an ensemble that equates recovery with parliamentary democracy, free market, capitalism, and the politics of identitarian difference. And this is also the topic of the work of Grupa Spomenik. For that reason, I will just shortly introduce a project called Mathem that happened in Belgrade. And that we called also forensic performance. And I would like to ask Branimir if he could. So the project Mathem consisted actually in and had two different forms. One form was that within the exhibition space, we established the production site, the newspaper editorial board. We said, okay, this space that we got for an exhibition will be an editorial newspaper board. So the method of this work at the same time was dislocation, and it was materialized in two different medias. One was this editorial board, as a forensic performance, and I will tell you. And finally, we had the newspaper, Mathem Sofre Association, that was a newspaper as a product of this, what happened there in this editorial board. So both the newspaper editorial board and the newspaper had as an object the genocide in Srebrenica. So performance consisted of dislocating two particular communities from Bosnia and Herzegovina, represented through a serial of lectures and discussions. And we have just to take in mind that it happened in Belgrade and in Serbia, which means also that it was happened in the culture of perpetrator, where actually there is a denial of Srebrenica genocide and also of the number of people who were killed. So how was it performed? The first segment, let's say, and the first community was actually a contemporary criminological forensic science and theory experts who represented, who were working at the ICMP, this International Commission for Missing People, and that is Sarajevo-based, but it is global institution that invented and developed a reassociation and identification process of the mortal remains of people killed in Srebrenica. So in order to get some kind of identification, they had to go through the process of identification, which are forensic archaeologists, DNA analysts, anthropologists, forensic anthropologists, etc. So we had a series of lectures that was held by these forensic experts and their work and the process of reassociation of one identity. So through one identity, we could understand actually what happened. I have also to say, genocide in Srebrenica is a very specific in the history and also in the world history, because it was unique that actually the mass graves were shifted. They were dislocated three times. So you had three different... So in order to reconstruct one identity, actually you had to... There is also a case that one person was dislocated in 15 different places. So with the result that one body might be distributed so all over. So you had actually to piece back together one identity, you had to go through the whole landscape of Bosnia. So the fact required a complex process, a very complex process of identification. And actually, for that reason, ICMP, the commission, has developed a very sophisticated forensic method and also unique administrative technique and managing post-war traumas principles. So this method of work has become at the same time a global model for identifying missing persons. So it was so complicated that actually it could fit everywhere. So it's being used, for example, in cases of missing, of the missing in the war in Iraq and the terrorist attack of the World Trade Center, the same method. So in establishing identity of number of persons missing during the Spanish Civil War, which sounds impossible almost, but they were in the, that happened in the 30s. So, but also for identifying victims of natural disasters like tsunami in South Asia or Hurricane Katrina in Louisiana. So each set of mortal remains is actually assigned, and then they, it has its number code, including the information where each part of the body actually, what does it represent. And that, for example, yeah, when the identification process is completed and all remains are collected, we get something which is called identification case number. And it also, by understanding this and revealing this identification case number, we can actually reconstruct the entire politics and ideology of all activities behind the annihilation of the people. And this is this identification code number. So we exhibited this in the space by revealing each part of the code and then understanding actually what was happening and actually what stands behind this. And then we also invited another community from Bosnia, and there were cultural workers and young artists who are also dealing and trying to develop a theory of genocide, and that was the moment when Damir also became a part of the Grupa Spomenik, but they were also criticizing the actual policies of reconciliation in Bosnia. They were also questioning the context and especially the field of human rights and social anthropology regarding the trials and the court justice, what it means to be a witness, to be witnessing and offer stories that are interpreted by different actors, and all other questions actually that they were they presented all this and through different medias. So the idea actually was to create a discussion between those two communities, and the scientists and the new emerging critics that appeared in this moment in Bosnia. They're living even in the same country. They never get into this discussion, because it is also some kind of a censorship in Bosnia to develop this kind of a discussion. We will understand which kind of censorship, etc. But doing this, in Serbia, where it was almost impossible to understand and actually to was some kind of a breakthrough. But also, as I said, within the culture of perpetrator. So actually, what we have done was this dislocation and then a discussion that was for us very important and opened a question that maybe Branimir could discuss. And
thank you, Milica. Thank you. Ja ću govoriti na srpskom, da Damir će me prevoditi.
I'll be interpreting, translating.
Kao što je Milica rekla, početni motiv rada grupe Spomenik je zapravo spomenik koji zapravo u svom sadržaju, imenu i načinu kako je mišljen, pokušava da zapravo sjedini dve nemoguće kulture, praktično kulturu počinioca zločina i žrtve.
So the main motivation, as Milica was saying, about starting Grupa Spomenik in the first thing is to examine what Spomenik as such contained and the whole open competition in its name and in the content and in its logic. And that is to try and reconciliate two irreconcilable cultures. One is of the victim and the other one is of the perpetrator.
U to vreme Gradska skupština Beograda posle promjena 2000-te je pokušala da napravi iskorak ka priznanju da je rat uopšte se desio.
So after the 2000 changes, the Belgrade City Assembly tried to make some sort of gesture to recognize that genocide indeed happened.
Međutim, to je učinjeno na taj način da zapravo politička volja unutar je dovela do toga da je nemoguće izgraditi spomenik žrtve u Beogradu.
However, that was done in such a way that the political willingness of the political elite then actually signaled that it was impossible to build a monument to the victim in Belgrade.
I da svaki pokušaj gradnje uvek je završavao na imenovanju spomenika koji je morao u sebi da ima palim borcima, sintagmu pali borac koji bi morao da ide u žrtvu da bi se spomenik uopšte izgradio.
So in order to possibly even build and contemplate building of the monument and conceiving of it, you had to have the term fallen soldier attached also to the victim.
A pali borac je bio neko koji je bio direktno u jugoslovenskim ratovima bio direktno odgovoran za žrtvu kojoj je spomenik trebao da bude posvećen.
And the fallen soldier as conceived in the monument call was somebody who was a direct perpetrator and who actually caused for the victim to exist in the first place.
Taj bizarni pokušaj bizarne, tako kažem, neseparacije kulture žrtve i kulture počinioca.
So this sort of bizarre conglomerate of the and the attempt not to separate the victim and the perpetrator
je naveo grupu spomenik da zapravo potraži ko je zapravo ultimativna žrtva ratova u Jugoslaviji.
Encouraged Grupa Spomenik to seek who is the ultimate victim of the Yugoslav wars.
I tako smo došli do problema žrtve genocida u Srebrenici.
And that is how we came to the notion of the ultimate victim of Srebrenica genocide.
Međutim, ono kroz istraživanje, mi smo 2.5 godine proveli na terenu Srebrenice, Tuzla, Srebrenica, okolna sela, susretali se s ljudima, razgovarali, pokušali da razumemo šta se dešava.
However, working for over 2.5 years in the field around Srebrenica and Tuzla, talking to people, trying to glean what's going on and what happened.
Pošto je genocid potpuno prećutan u kulturi počinioca u Srbiji.
Given and noting the fact that genocide is completely denied and silenced in the culture of the perpetrator in Serbia.
Mi smo shvatili da zapravo ta nesepariranost između počinioca genocida u Srebrenici i žrtve je još drastičnija u samoj Srebrenici.
What we came to realize is that this inability to separate the victim and the perpetrator is even more drastic in Srebrenica itself.
Preživeli ljudi koji su izbegli genocid u Srebrenici.
The survivors who fled genocide.
Sreću se sa ljudima koji su doneli direktne odluke i koji su na vlasti u Srebrenici, u lokalnoj samoupravi.
Now on daily basis meet people who made the decisions to carry out the genocide.
I koji su direktno bili odgovorni za ubistvo njihovih najbližih.
Those people, those very people who were directly responsible for executing their loved ones.
Drugim rečima, tamo ne da je kultura suživota počinioca i žrtve praktično sakrivena, ona je praktično deo svakidašnjeg života.
So this merger between the victim and the perpetrator, this joint life, is not at all hidden. Actually, it is visible. It is in actuality on a daily basis.
I što je najstrašnije, ona proizvodi svojevrsnu kulturu apartheida, postgenocidnog apartheida.
And what's even more terrific is that it perpetrates the culture and practice of apartheid.
jer na nivou svakidašnjeg života niti žrtve prepoznaju i priznaju počinioce.
So on the everyday level, what is happening is that the victims, the survivors, do not acknowledge and recognize the perpetrators.
Niti počinioci hoće da imaju bilo kakav kontakt sa žrtvama i naslednicima žrtve.
Nor do the perpetrators want have anything to do with the victims.
E tako smo zaključili onda da jedino strašnije od samog genocida je zapravo postgenocidna situacija.
So what we concluded is that the only more horrifying thing than the genocide itself is the post-genocide condition.
I ceo problem je u tome što smo onda počeli da tragamo za tim, pa šta drži na okupu sad šta drži mogućom tu situaciju suživota, prisilnog suživota ili apartheidog suživota počinioca i žrtve.
So the only possible question to pose in this kind of constellation is what makes possible this bizarre conglomerate of the apartheid life between the victim and the perpetrator.
I shvatili smo da postoji nešto što je zapravo čitav jedan inženjering postgenocidne traume koji omogućava tu vrstu nesepariranosti koji da kažem diktira post-apartheidsko društvo.
So what
post-genocidno apartheid društvo.
So what we've come up with is the entire mechanism of the engineering and the management of this post-genocide apartheid.
I da ona zapravo leži u ideologiji pomirenja.
And that it is precisely located in the ideology of reconciliation.
Koja zapravo administrira i vodi mehanizme, da kažem, pomirenja post-genocidnog društva na taj način da ne vrši nikakvu korekciju unutar društva, apartheidskog društva.
So, and it, the politics of reconciliation does it in such a way that it does not at all intervene in this new situation of the apartheid.
I tada smo shvatili da zapravo pomirenje da im donosi mir.
But rather administers it and manages it. And that is when we realized that that reconciliation does not bring peace.
I da je zapravo to jedno stanje zamrznutog rata koje se zapravo nastavlja drugim sredstvima.
And that it is a state of a frozen war that is only continued by other means.
I da forenzika u ovom slučaju je praktično deo čitavog aparata ideologije pomirenja i da ona zapravo služi jednoj, kako kažem, tehničkoj neutralnoj, na prvi pogled neutralnoj naučnoj disciplini koja pokušava, tako kažem, da kroz proces reasocijacije ubijenog u genocidu, zapravo obavi jednu stvar koja na kraju cementira ove odnose apartheidnog društva, postgenocidnog apartheidnog društva.
So what we actually realize is that the forensic science in attempting to reconstruct the bodies of the victims and, you know, to return them for the burial, in fact, only cements and it's put in the administration of this war by other means. It only cements these relationships of apartheid in this post-genocide society.
Da, i onda smo postavili pitanje zapravo šta je ta, koje su to temeljne strukture koje proizvode toga i tako da smo došli ipak do nečega da je to nije samo problem ex-Jugoslavije, da je to problem samo ex-Jugoslavije, to ne bi bio veliki problem.
So then we wanted to see what kind of structures enabled this, and then we soon came to realize that it wasn't only the problem of former Yugoslavia. I mean, if it were, that would be very easy to solve, but actually that the stakes are much higher.
Jer ja ću vas podsjetiti da postoje samo zapravo tri modernizma epohalno, to su sovjetski, nemački ili nacionalno-socijalistički modernizam i američki, to jest pragmatička čarski. Ako je sovjetski zapravo vezan za filozofiju dijalektičkog materijalizma i za ime Staljina, nemački modernizam ili evropski kontinentalni modernizam vezan je za nacionalsocijalizam i za ime u ekvivalent Heideggera, i američki pragmatizam za ime Peirce.
Yes. So actually, and by way of saying this, let us return to the three existing modernisms or modernist movements in the 20th century. One is the Soviet type, which is directly related to dialectical materialism and Stalin. The other one is National Socialist, European, continental European one, that is connected to Heidegger. And the third one is the pragmatic American one, connected to Peirce.
E sad, svaki od tih modernizma je bio odgovor na jedan unutrašnji problem, kažem, koji je zapravo centralno-evropski problem, a to je ono što Michel Foucault kaže, temeljna struktura Evrope je struktura permanentnog rasnog rata.
So, and each of these modernisms was an attempt to tackle the problem, which is, in essence, a central European problem, and as defined by Michel Foucault, by saying that the problem of Europe or of
continental
Europe is and its structure is that it's
race war.
It's a race war.
Dakle, temeljna struktura, hiljadugodišnja struktura je rasni rat koji besni i
so
koji
za racial war or race war is the war that's been going on for 1,000 years.
Tako da nisu vaše džave prece pobegli ne samo od siromašne iz Evrope, nego upravo od tog rasnog vora i smislili jedan drugi univerzum.
So your ancestors here in America didn't only flee this racial war, but I mean they fled the entire logic to think and of a new way of being.
To je, da kažem, model američkog modernizma,
which is this American
koji je proizašao iz američke revolucije.
That's carried out and that's gleaned from the American Revolution.
I koji je zapravo koji kao problem nema više rasni rat, ali ima jedan permanentni građanski rat u osnovi.
Which now does not deal with the race war, racial war, but has the civil war as its basis.
Jedan permanentni kontrolisani
continuous controlled and managed civil war.
Ideologija ljudskih prava upravo iz toga i proizišla, iz tog kako da kažem, kako menadžovati
an ideology of human rights precisely attempts and is an answer to manage this permanent civil war.
A s treće strane, naravno, sovjetski modernizam je imao klasni rat u osnovi.
But and the Soviet modernism as its basis, the way it was articulated, had the class war.
Yes. E sad, ja za Jugoslaviju imam jednu, da je on zapravo, da je Jugoslavija mesto četvrtog ili malog modernizma.
Now my thesis is that Yugoslavia is the site of a tiny modernist, fourth modernist move.
Koji je izrastao iz drugog svjetskog rata i jedne strategije otpora rasnom ratu, nacionalsocijalističkom ratu.
That arose in tension and conflict with the National Socialist race war.
I da je proizveo jednu novu kategoriju, a to je people
And it produced the category of the people in Yugoslavia.
People liberation struggle.
People through the people's liberation struggle.
A taj pojam naroda je zapravo jedan potpuno nov pojam, zato što je zapravo subjekt napravljen od rasnog treša, od rasnog džubrita.
So what this movement does is that it makes the political subjectivity, this political people, out of literally the trash or the excrement that's left over and out of this race.
Zato što su mu prišli svi zapravo svi oni koji su otpali od svojih naroda na bilo koji način.
Everything that was abject in various nations came together.
I taj model je trajao jedno vreme, da kaže, konstituisao se kroz jugoslavenski federalizam, ali je brzo istrošen kroz istoriju socijalizma.
But this model, this was created in the people's liberation anti-fascist struggle of the Second World War, then continued its life through particular type of Yugoslav federalism, but it got spent.
Tako da je na kraju praktično istorije Jugoslavije se desilo ono što je zapravo bio njen uslov ulaska, to da kažem, u temeljne strukture u Evrope.
So at the end of Yugoslavia, what really paradoxically happened was that what it actually originally enabled Yugoslavia to enter European constellations and structures.
Da se odigra jedan rasni rat.
And that was the enactment of the racial war.
I Srebrenica je zapravo je proizvod toga.
So Srebrenica is enactment and the product of that.
Hvala.
Thank you.
Maybe. Yes, but I would like just shortly to make some kind of introduction, because we were speaking about this editorial newspaper board forensic performance that was happening there, and the dislocation of these two communities. Then I would like to present a few different forms that came out of this project called MATEM. So there is something that we call distributive objects or participative monuments. This is the way also how we make public discussions that sometimes happened out of the public space. It is in the space of the exhibition space, but it is also like a takeaway installation that, as an aesthetical object, disappears. So it remains just in the hands of the viewer. We have also reading performances of these publications, but the reading performances are thought as a group reading where in every moment, for any, let's say, if any association or any reason of the participants, let's say, emerges as a important to ask, to comment, and to develop an idea or a concept out of this act of reading. We also do interventions, discussions, and declarations, analyses, and lectures. But we also produce performances. Pythagorean lecture was a lecture that happened actually in a form of akousmatem, as a voice. So it is a specific form, let's say, of transmission of knowledge, and it is defined by the physical position of the lecturer. So the lecturer, and it was taken over because Pythagora was at the time. Pythagora, Pythagora. So he held his lectures, the school, the Pythagora school, was happening, especially in the time of initiating the students to start, before they start to become a permanent student of the school. It was always happening behind the curtain, so you could just hear the voice. So any kind of representation was blocked. And this, here are we again, the same when we speak about container. Yeah, so the lecturer stands behind the curtain, so we it's just the voice is accessible. And the source, let's say, of information representation. So it means at the same time separating our discourse from everyday representation, because our theme was actually genocide, the subject of our performance. And this performance came out of the performance that happened in Belgrade that we were speaking. So we produced actually a performance, then a newspaper, then a performance that actually has different model or form of representation. And actually, we could say that public articulation and actualization of Yugoslavia as a political experience in the contemporary post-genocide society is actually excluded from the dominant public sphere. In Serbia, total denial. In Bosnia, consequences of reconciliation and total division of ethnical groups. So there is no possibility to be non-ethnically defined. And this is also a specific way of living. So, so examining genocide as a theme, we see this as a production of a counter-public sphere. And we name it also Yugoslav studies, but it is also then connected to, let's say, other topics. And Yugoslav studies, I will say a few words about, let's say, Yugoslav studies and different topics that are our. There are several projects. One of the projects is Four Faces of Omarska. Just shortly. So Four Faces of Omarska, or what is the name of the word today? What is the name of the word today is a translation project. And it started actually by translating a PhD of Katarina Haas that is written in French language. And never being published. She was a PhD student at in Paris 8. I think her teacher was Sylvain Lazaris, and he was her doctoral
mentor.
So, but it was never published. She's discussing actually. What is standing behind the name of the war today? How can we define the war? Because there is a certain shift from a Clausewitz. It was that the war is a politics by other means, by oružen, kako se kaže? Armed means. In the other hand, we have a totally new definition of the war, that the whole ethnic groups, states, are positioned out of the law. And that actually this gives a possibility to, let's say, to produce anything. Kako ne znam kako da objasnim to? Nešto sam se zapravo. And actually the translation project of this the fact was that we were using ignorant schoolmaster principles of Rancière, and we were using the let's say the principle not knowing the language, but translating it, and actually through this translation, discussing and understanding the means of it. So we started with 8 different translation groups all over former Yugoslavia, and one was also happening in Belgium, where everybody, each group started to translate a part of this doctorate. So the final, let's say, result is that one happened in Pristia on Albanian language, another was in Croatian language, Bosnian, Serbo-Croatian, etc. It was a question of trust in one hand, and in another hand, actually, discussion was much more important than that what was translated, a discussion on the war, and that what the meaning of the war. And the understanding of this new notion of the war that does not include peace, and it's actually called in different, like war on terror, permanent war, etc. Yes, and then Four Faces of Omerska is a project that is also part of the Yugoslav studies that is about a mining complex that is in Bosnia, in Republika Srpska. Republika Srpska is a part of Bosnia that is governed by Serbian-Bosnian. Mogli bi sad objasnimo, ali da. Maybe I could explain, but it would be maybe. So, what is important? It is a mining complex that actually, in socialistic time, was a mining complex. Then it turned into the concentration camp and death camp. Then it turned again into the mining complex owned by the multinational company called Lakshmi Mittal, which is one of the most, let's say, biggest and richest company in the world of producing metal. And it is also being used as a film shooting site of the Serbian film production. And now, there is, why is it important? It is important because it pictures at the same time not just the history and the Sudbina fate of the Yugoslav citizens, because through all these epochs, and also the role of the culture and art that actually participates in constructing national and the new history and the new cultural history also, it also reveals the way, it's a very, global question of process of privatization, a transition from socialism to capitalism, or from any other kind of economical political system to capitalism. So the aim of the project is actually a production of a non-material monument that will question and that will be produced out of common knowledge, and that will state for me. But maybe you can we can skip and you can maybe.
Well, I'm just going to briefly say about the project that I'm working on, and it is called Love After Genocide. And this project actually encompasses a series of writings and public interventions in Bosnia and Herzegovina and elsewhere that, as its main premise, has precisely the name and the title of where we are today. What is an open society? An open society is a society that opens up the mass grave in a different and more hopeful way. And there cannot be an open society unless we open up the mass grave and return to it to produce some sort of hopeful politics and hopeful stance to life that remains. So what do I mean by this? I mean by this the way in which we can suspend this apartheid that Branimir was talking about, and translation by other means that we can facilitate and make possible. How do we interrupt the way in which the victim is put together and reburied again in such a way that only cements the perpetrator's view, and that takes as dominant the view of the perpetrator? So in my idea, how Love After Genocide makes open society is by doing three major things. One is that it calls us to return to the mass grave in order to suspend this violence of the law of the mass grave that is exercised against the dead and the living. Because what this apartheid is actually the law of the mass grave, that not only is operative in the mass grave itself, but more horrifically is operative in the life that remains. Because the logic that led to the mass grave is operative outside of it. So one thing is to return to the mass grave to suspend the violence of this law of the mass grave. The second thing is to suspend the boundary, this fake boundary that exists between the mass grave and what's out of it. We live the mass grave. The metonym of the present is the mass grave, because we in Bosnia and Herzegovina are not only reconstituted as bodies, but as subjects, as political subjects, as our freedom is curbed by this mass grave. So we have to suspend this boundary and talk about it, how inequality and terror of the mass grave is present in everyday life. And the third move, we have to go back to the bone. We have to sift through these bones and identify that particular bone that cannot be identified and claim it as the site and space for the production of this new way of being, new way of political life that is only possible. And in actuality, there are some bones that cannot be identified because they are deteriorated, DNA cannot be extracted. So what do we do with this bone? It is as if this bone itself resists being put in the service of ethnic politics. Now, precisely because it is unidentified, precisely because it is this excrement, it is this waste of racial or ethnic compartmentalization. The point is to put it together in such a way and claim it as the site of new politics. Because only that bone alone that resists any sort of ideological manipulation can make us think about not only how unfree we are today, but how to shift these limits to our freedom. Thank you. Okay. Yes, please. Now, yes, now as you're finished, please, if you have any questions, we'd be more than glad and willing to answer them.
My name is Jaroslav Andiel. I am from Prague. And I would be curious if you can be more specific about how you would achieve your project. You, one specific thing, you said you would go to the bones, but can you go beyond that?
Yeah, that's a very good question, actually. That is what I'm working on. Love After Genocide, as I'm currently writing about it and doing various performances in Bosnia and Herzegovina, but not Bosnia and Herzegovina alone, is looking at three distinct things. One is how cultural and how culture and arts produces various moves to go around suspending the logic, right, of this law of the mass grave. Right. How do you have new imaginaries being developed? So I'm looking at not what I think should happen, but how there are already moves and strategies to deal with this, with the suspension, with the violence. Also looking at the excrement itself in memory. There are certain narratives, there are certain voices that are not heard, because they do not commemorate and remember their loved ones and the missing ones according to what is officially accepted. So these hidden memories, these hidden from the public sight memories, are also important because they teach us how we can adopt a hopeful stance towards commemoration. And then the bone itself resists this, what we said at the introduction, not just the forensic mechanism, but how this unholy triad that exists now in Bosnia and is gathered by the politics of reconciliation. You have the international administrator, the bureaucrat, coming together with the scientist, who then come together with the priest to just say, these are the procedures and this is how this identity is put together and then is returned. But this identity is returned precisely as the ethnic other, executed ethnic other. And this person who was executed, the victim who was executed, was only the ethnic other from the perspective of those who executed them. And that is actually, it's a very complicated move. You have to unravel the complex mechanism of return. So the return to the bone itself would say, so how can we think different ways of putting together? How can we proclaim this bone as common good? Right? Or what we or how we call it, javno dobro. So it is the collectivity. It belongs to us all, and which means that we all have the responsibility to it. Responsibility not only to that goes not in the shape of fetishizing this bone, but that reminds us of why that bone came to be there in the first place and how we are going to put it together. So, and actually that kind of invitation calls us to suspend what we politically have today. And it's about how society can develop two very important things. One is the public language of grief. If you reduce this kind of loss to the familial and the personal, that is a lie. Yes, it is personal loss. If you've lost, you know, your father, your brother, and everybody, it is your personal loss. But you didn't, these deaths did not happen as a cause of natural catastrophe. You know, they didn't just befall these people. These deaths were caused by a particular political project that was never, and we have to be reminded, never put to trial, never condemned. Nobody has condemned the political projects that led to the mass grave. It was a very clear-cut situation after World War II. National Socialism was banned as a political project. Ethnic projects that led to the mass graves were not condemned as projects, as political projects. People were put to trial, but not the ideas and the logic that stands behind that. So one thing is that the public language of grief calls for the loss to be conceived of as societal, right? And precisely thinking of the bone as the common good returns to us the possibility to think about society, to think about what is, if we are going to use the trope of open society, why is this society open, right? So that is one move. The second move is necessarily the suspension of the current politics of the apartheid, an impossibility of this silence that is now imposed by the dominance of the ethnic. Right. I mean, these are just the preliminary thoughts. How do I propose to do that? Is to propose the parameters of the discussion, to actually say, you know, that there are other possibilities and that these indicate to the other possibilities. And we have to start from there, because that is the only site. What I'm actually indicating is where we start from, without inscribing any sort of, you know, ultimate end. Because ultimately it is for everybody. If it's a common good, it is a matter of us all. And that is why it has the form not of the forensics as the forum that somebody is presenting something and making a legal case for something or making a public case, but how can we contemplate the politics of equality for everybody, for all, in one site that could be, you know, called, with current political moves in Yugoslavia, plenum. And the plenum is the site that is full participation of everybody in making politically relevant social decisions.
Can I have another?
Yes, please.
Response. Well, I think we are talking here about political subjectivity, and my question was focused more on practical or, let's say, instrumental side of the thing. When I ask you how do you want to achieve that, I did not mean just by writing. Of course, that's also part of that process of political subjectivization, but that's just the beginning. My question was more directed, what are following steps after that?
Well, actually, I have to apologize because, you know, as somebody who is dealing in theory and you know, concrete activities, I think of the various things that are helpful theoretically, but practically, this is precisely uses the methodology that we all talked about of opening up the participation of everybody in deliberating these things around these topics. So what I do is I do public readings of poetry that through poetry we activate the talk about, just like what Milica was talking about, container. I use poetry to talk about how the holes in the social tissues came about, and then what is it, who was implicated, and how we remember these things, and then what we are going to do about them. So by opening up this public space for a debate on this, that is a very concrete and practical step to involve people in deliberating and thinking about and acting on their deliberations jointly. I hope this kind of gives you the answer.
Okay. Hello, my name is Jessica Burr. And my question is just, do you include in your work an investigation of the lives of children who were born as a result of rape during the war?
There's a for everybody? No, botched.
No, we not include this particular problem in our production of very complicated situation between genocide, who is for us ultimate crime on ex-Yugoslavia. This is also terrible crime. Yes, we know very well the problem, but we not include. We don't have a response to this problem in our work.
Yes, but this is also part of the post-war collectives. That what you said, and actually by working on this, it means also that we include, but not as a particular question.
Hi, my name is Patricia Gerardo. I work in our U.S. programs here at Open Society. I want to thank you so much. This was a mind-blowing presentation, and your previous comment about public grief is just making me think so much in many different ways. I guess what I'm interested in, I was very interested in hearing about how your work is also building memory and constructing memory. Part of the work that I do here in working in the American South is around reconstruction or re-remembering a part of our history that we lost with our own reconstruction after our Civil War, which was a brief period from 1865 to 1877. What we're seeing now in a lot of our voter suppression work that's going on in the United States is a reconstruction of a lot of the tactics and uses that were used to abolish the gains of reconstruction. And what we're doing now, working with different communities, is how do you redevelop this history that's been lost? And how do you build political consciousness when there's not a memory that exists there? So I'm very interested in how you see both your work in terms of developing a permanence of memory, that the lessons that you learn or the conversations and the process that you're going through does not get lost. Is there a way of doing that? Does artistic practice lend itself to that in a way that history, or, and I'm an activist by training practice, so I would be very curious in how you see artistic practice as being able to extend memory.
If I can just start, and then a very important topic, let's say, in our was the politics of memory. And this was also a syntagma that we started to think about. And for many years ago, like on the early beginning of the, it was already before the monument, it was in 2001, when it appeared first time in our conversations. And then actually we started to work on this. But then it was actually, what does it mean, a politics of memory? And this is an important point also of our work, that actually there is no memory without political subject. So we have a historical memory or private memory, but actually just the political subject is capable to remember a certain politics that we want to refer, or that it's able to refer. And for that reason, we have also different ways of reconstruction processes, etc., that happens also in Europe, all over the world.
Maybe your question about permanency of memory. It's not possible. Memory is a problem of political struggle about what is the memory. And this is a very complicated process. It's not, you don't have transparency of one situation. You must every time be in the political struggle about what is the content of memory and what is the form. Form and content is a two level who produce situation of political struggle about what is the memory.
I would include in that continuity of memory, which is what we're facing now, because there is a loss of language context around, around what we want to be talking about.
Yeah. Or actually, and I would also add, the crucial thing is who has the right to remember, you know? And you know, what do you do with this gap? What do you do with this horrible gap that haunts society, right? And the point is not to put together this cumulative history, because that doesn't make. But then, what is this memory in actuality? Right.
Yeah.
Good. Thank you. I would like to actually hear more about your project.
Yes.
So that would be fantastic.
Yes, it's a fantastic project, I think.
Right, I would love
to. Yes.
Yeah, we will, for sure.
Hi, my name is Nadia Perucic, and I have a specific question about your intended audience. And I guess you were kind of talking earlier about certain strategies of infiltrating what you call a very monolithic public sphere and discourse. And kind of what it means to present your work in a post-Yugoslav context, so Serbia and Bosnia, as opposed to an international biennale, and sort of is the aim of your work to reach a certain audience, I guess more than just produce an artwork that can circulate internationally, but that can do both.
Of course. And actually, our We are working, from 2002, and the first time that we had any, let's say, you said Biennale, we never was on Biennale, it's Grupa Spomenik, but this is also very important, and our first appearance was actually with the Pythagorean lecture, and our, let's say, very, very... our aim is really to produce a counter public sphere. So something that is also part of the Yugoslav studies, and also some kind of the continuation of the Grupa Spomenik and the race is also something that Branimir is running in Belgrade, and this is a library called Ignorant Schoolmaster and his committees. Within this institution, or is it institution? Yeah. Within this library, they're developing discussion also with the veterans of the war of the 90s. And this is maybe for the first time that, I don't know if you know, but yes, but this is also, Serbia has 6 million people and there are 1 million veterans. And there were 22,000 people being involved in dislocating the mass graves from Serbia, not from Republika Srpska in Bosnia, or from Republika Srpska army. At that time, it was just an army. It became a part of the state, ethnic, entity, sorry. So they are developing, and this is maybe a first move in a direct, for, but then this is always this question, art versus activism, and actually activism, and this is a big issue. Is it that anything what we do within the field of art that is so strong and so, let's say, so bordered and so impermeable, that anything what we do there does not have any impact on the society, on the state, and has no, you know. So what we try to do is actually also by working on different fields, you already make this frame permeable. Then working in different forms that maybe sometimes don't look as a production of art. But me as an artist, I'm really interested in new form of exhibiting, of production. And I think that the only way actually to do it, this is to do this from the point, as he said, as Damir said, from the bone. Which means from that connects us, all of us in this, and that would be actually a genocide. So from this, let's say, uncomfortable position, to think and to produce art can give any possibility, let's say, of new strategies or new forms. So, but to make this art frame permeable, this is for me the first and the first, let's say, step, the first task, let's say. So of course it is very important. But then it's also a question: do we have to go to each person to talk to everybody, or we should work and do, let's say, produce certain things that will accumulate and it will find their ways to come to the people. So this is also, yeah.
Of course, but we have a very, very primitive urge to use the art. We are activists without any finance resource, and we use the production money for exhibition to produce our activist program.
But I'm not an activist, this is also...
I'm activist in this. I'm totally activist without any finance support, and we use the artistic file to thief the money for our activism.
To thief.
Well,
yes, of course.
Well, I mean, I will give you a concrete example. So when I started working with Spomenik, I was working with the International Commission on Missing Persons, and then the whole idea then was born to focus on the genocide, and then to bring the forensic community into the space of art, and to bring the theoretical community, precisely use the frame of art. I'm just going to crudely say, as an excuse to open up the space. I mean, you know, and then see how we can both implode the boundary of art, of what art means, but to do the precise, you know, the intervention. I mean, you know, for instance, one of the offshoots of Love After Genocide, because poetry is discussed in a public space with everybody participating, is to produce the transcripts. And then people do something with these poems. For instance, they, you know, I had people, when I did this in Banja Luka, start saying, well, I live 9 miles from Srebrenica, so who are these people? Who are my parents? Who are my parents? I mean, that was the girl said, what did my parents do then? And then, when you create this crisis, which is the crisis of questioning and witnessing merged, is that then you can start posing, you know, breaking the silence. And then, I would go a step further, because I work also in an education setting at university as a professor. So I would say, okay, put together the transcripts, how people talk about it, and analyze poetry, and publish a textbook on contemporary poetry, because this is the only way to educate and to talk about poetry through proper way, for me, properly aware way, where everybody speaks and analyzes and contributes to creating something more than the poem itself, right? And use it as, let's use this as a textbook. Present it, already when you say that the format of a textbook is exploded, then, you know, you have achieved something in education terms.
Yes, but what I want to say, the role of the artist is also, let's say, artist social, let's say, age, not just again, it's highly connected, and there is no possibility to, so it could be also viewed from the totally different position than you were saying. And actually, the first time these readings of the poetry happened within the exhibition site, and then it was possible to do this at the university, then to do this. And actually, art has also this possibility to make breakthroughs. And let's say, but the dynamic of the group, not just by being having different positions and different, let's say, forms of working and different professions, actually also dynamic of the people who enter into the monument group and leave. I mean, this is also, for me, a crucial moment of turns. What becomes an important topic and what not, and
Hi, thank you so much. It's always amazing to hear more and more how the work that you're doing unfolds. I'm Catherine Carl, I should say. I'm at the Graduate Center. And I have a question about, the goal being to produce a counterpublic sphere and the plenum in which there's a kind of full participation in which everybody's speaking, and how you get to that, particularly in relation to this binding. I mean, I was very struck in what you were saying about monuments could only previously image the perpetrator and the victim kind of together, and that there's also this daily life of binding, obviously, because this is the public sphere, but that exists. This is the metonymy that exists of the mass grave every day, but yet there's that missing part of actually bringing the perpetrator in a way to the table. But what is the perpetrator? And I think also the problem of always focusing on the victim, because that's what was denied a voice in a certain way, and the bone brings a voice, but brings sometimes a inaccurate voice in a way, as you've, or it's been named instead of actually having a voice. So my question, I guess, is in the move where the there's an emphasis always on the victim, the problem of the political apparatus that actually created the victim. There was the perpetrator as an individual, but there's a political apparatus that has not been indicted, as you're saying. How are you going to have that at the table, I guess, is the question in the plenum. How does that voice get heard and critiqued and has to become part of the counter public sphere, but should not be the dominant? That's what, how do you deal with that in your goal?
I don't know, this is a very interesting question about a critical position of victim and apparatus who produce position of victim all the time. And our aim is to broken apparat or mechanism of apparatus who produce the position, permanent position of victim. For us, on the end, the victim is the guilty for what is not subjectivated at the moment where be subject in the, in this situation. And we want to broke this mechanism who produce, and not administrative, schools mechanisms, all apparatus produce now ideology of victims. And all citizen of ex-Yugoslavia is in position of victims. This is the problem. And all schools programs, some kind of education for imbecile, and victim is some kind of imbecile, some kind of the broken subjectivity, this some kind of perverse object of manipulation and investigation of, I don't know how structure is, name it in this moment.
I would actually say something by positing two things. In my view, and it just occurred to me, if you built a monument, any monument built would probably celebrate the mass grave. And because it would celebrate the logic that led to the mass grave. So that's one thing about the building of the monument. The second thing is about the victim. And I think of the victim discourse as this amazing position, what in psychoanalysis would be called lying by using truth. And the victim has, or the discourse around the victim, has this amazing capacity to lie by using the truth. And what do I mean by this? By this I mean is that, yes, you say it is the victim, but then you are lying about everything else because you reduce the victim to the position of the victim, and just saying that the victim can only speak as the victim and nothing more. And, you know, in a way, it is a very disabling position, right? So the point is to break these two things where you kind of, on the one hand, universalize far too easily and say, you know, it's this kind of generic big victim. And then all of a sudden, reduce the, you know, the victim to her or his own particular predicament at that very moment when injury, historical and political injury, was done. And, you know, and what is missing in between is life. Life is missing. This is the question about life and how you suspend this lying by using the truth, which all these mechanisms are just willingly or unwillingly committing and participating in. So that for me is the crux, you know, how you achieve life by suspending lying by using truth.
I just would like to answer on the counter public sphere and let's say plan and the positions how to bring now. First thing actually is when we speak about counter public sphere, and then, for example, we take Serbia as example. When we have a perpetrator culture, we could say, okay, public interest sphere is to hear the victim within this culture, and to hear not the victim, but the process how this one, her or he, became a victim. This is a creation of, but it is also a creation of counter public sphere. To speak about 1 million veterans that are a part of production of the politics of Serbia, but not being present in the public. So how to make visible the whole network of that, what is hidden and producing a certain politics, but not being tangible, not being part, this is a counter-public sphere. And then now, how to bring all them and to say, okay, you all have right to speak. And this is something that we said, okay, we are thinking about the plenum as when we think about forum and the forensic and the forum that where we can bring the evidence and then build the... we think always about, this is also some kind of a result of our thinking and participating in this event's last day about forensic aesthetics. So we think that the plenum is something, but okay, how can they, are they equalized, the perpetrator, let's say, and the victim, if they are on the plenum? No, we said we are producing the public, let's say, space where all this could be discussed. This is our, we took this as our creation, artistic creation. But then, as we said, not through the models of reconciliation between the subjects, but rather whereby each of defines his own political position. Yeah. And this is something, and this is actually plenum.
Yeah.
In its
I'm going to add to this by graphic ways of saying so. You know, after the war in Bosnia and Herzegovina, various internationals came to teach us how to communicate. So, you know, I was 19 when the war ended. So they would bring us together in the room. I remember going to Banja Luka in 96. And, you know, we would be sitting with other 19-year-olds and, you know, teenagers. I mean, we had our concerns. I mean, all we wanted was to just go off and, you know, have a beer afterwards and, you know, have fun and just go and listen to music. But no, the framework within which this was done was called the giraffe language. You know? So you had the facilitators coming to train you by using the giraffe language, and which means active listening, so you're just kind of acknowledging the position, and then you end up by not doing anything, really. I mean, you know, you just end up by staying in your own separate sphere, having paid lip service to this. Now, plenum is not about the giraffe language. It's about, you know, the other type of common language. You know, it's about this common space where everybody participates and makes the decisions, but makes a political statement about their decision, where they stand in relation to this grievous and heinous injustice that was committed. But exactly, and that's what it is. And, you know, precisely not by this respect to individual differences, and so that somehow they're beautifully managed, you know, which perpetuates the lie that these people don't live together. So it is just kind of, they have their own little track, and they, you know, carry on, and there are these parallel tracks, they never intersect. Well, that's a lie. You know, plenum is confronting this lie by positing the truth of everybody participating on equal basis and, you know, stating their own position.
Mike.
Because I'm very curious in this, and this is such a fascinating topic, but it's also, you propose it as it's lie versus truth, but isn't it also a completion and a satisfaction versus, you know, leaving an open wound and no closure? And my response can be very American, but it's where is the satisfaction from not having, you know, it's basically, it's an anti-story, right? When you don't have a beginning, middle, and end, when there's this openness that still exists, that everyone's telling their story, but there's no completion to it. And so then how do you get to that satisfaction level where people are feeling, so even in the example that you use around, you know, people are being heard, but in a false way, I think it's that role play that also, even when it's false, gives a satisfaction for people that at least I get to tell my story. So it's not a truth, but it's a role play that delivers an emotional satisfaction for people.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I wouldn't put it in terms of satisfaction, yet very oddly I know what you mean. I know what you mean precisely because I know I can feel the effect when you read poetry over 2 days, when these people, you know, carry this. So, and there is a sense of satisfaction, but I wouldn't, it's not like a fuzzy blanket satisfaction type thing, or, you know, you're having a nice cup of coffee and then, you know, being satisfied or nourished in such a way. It's a different type of satisfaction, what you would say. And I wouldn't say that it's closure. I don't believe that there is such a thing as closure. I believe where I am at now, I believe that there is some sort of integration of loss, but the question is how this loss can be integrated rather than closed, because it let's face it, it's never going to be closed. Just like think about the American Civil War, you know, what kind of closure that produced, and the closures of closures, and the attempt. It's not about attempting to close, because any kind of closure forecloses something, you know. So, I mean, there is that's the danger in the closure. So, and it is not about cacophony. I don't think it's about, you know, having people just, you know, hearing people. The point for me is, and I'm thinking about how people react to the poems, you know, the question is one of setting for me, one of setting in which this happens, and allowing people to speak first and foremost. Because the way that this is, the way that people speak now is precisely not heard. And it's kind of, you know, lost. All this voice, all this speaking is lost in the, you know, because hearing, who is going to hear? You know, and then it just drops. You know, if you have a setting in which people can speak, but speak how? Without censorship, you know, by speaking the truth. And whatever comes to their mind. Because that is one of the ways. There are two simple rules, where, for instance, when you build and create this kind of space, when you use poetry, you know, to speak the truth by speaking whatever occurs to you, right? And then people start engaging rather than speaking their own already, you know, a rehearsed story. This is not about the story, as Milica said. It's not about, you know, I have a ready-made script and I've come with this position. The point is, by engaging people in the relationship around the problematic issue, precisely for them to shift their own position. Because, you know, if they stay, the position, their position is the monument, right? They're immured, completely immured in that position. And, you know, the point is, how do you enable a framework within which they can move from their position for something else? I don't know if this makes sense.
Yes, of course.
I think this question about closure really points out to the issue of politics of temporality. And isn't it interesting that this ethnic cleansing project in Yugoslavia started exactly where you want to go, with opening mass graves? I would like to comment you on this.
Yes, it did. But I mean, you know, any sort of, but it came from the excavation and reification and this fetish. The bone became the fetish for this societal impossibility. You know, and then all this this anger was then channeled and mobilized around the book. Resentment that was created around it. Yes, it was, but for what purpose, right? It was to glorify the bone, to bow to the bone, to kiss the bone. Declare this bone, declare the relic as the substance of the ethnic.
A to se u celoj Evropi sada
događa. Yeah, which is actually, it's got nothing to do, as Milica is saying, you know, just with Yugoslavia. I mean, Yugoslavia actually just said, Yugoslavia was a symptom to say what the future of Europe will be. I mean, because that is what's going on in Europe now. There are various sort of restitutions, happening and taking place, precisely to reify the remains. But this is beyond the reification of the remains, because this remain.
I understand that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
But I'm just commenting that there is a strange irony.
Exactly.
Yes.
Turning it around.
Yes.
Yes. Of course.
Yes.
But then I would.
Mike, please.
Well, there was another point which was coming up, and that was, you just were talking about it, but we have to remember that the history of Europe is actually, and that is history of modern nation state, is a history of ethnic cleansing from the very beginning. So how do you want, you raised the question that this has never been put to trial, this ethnic cleansing project, this ethnic war, or whatever you would call it. But the answer to that question is exactly what I am saying, because that's the basis of European history, which ran its course.
Yeah.
And some people argue that the war in former Yugoslavia is like the last stage of that big historical project.
But that this is precisely lying by using truth, in a way. You just see the various trends, and then you say, well, you know, it is only logical. There was nothing inevitable about the war. There was nothing, that mass grave, the genocide did not have to happen, right? It was a matter of a decision for it to happen. At any point, I mean, it's a comfortable excuse to inscribe yourself in a ready-made teleology, because then you can exculpate yourself. You say, oh, it's a course of a thousand-year history, you know. Oh, you're just contributing to it, you know. But I mean, you know, that is a very comfortable lie. That is opportunism at its largest, you know. So you know, if it is about this kind of European, course, the question is, there were other moves in European history that defied, and one of the things that we are working on is we are working on two or three instances in the course of 20th century that precisely try to blast this kind of continuum of history open, this, you know, necessity, this temporal necessity that you're talking about. One, we talk about Rosa Luxemburg's Spartakusbund, Spartacus group, that was the emancipatory subject that then had to be executed. We are precisely talking about this as a European predicament. You know, it had to be executed, and then what was executed again was this political people, this fourth category that Branimir talked about, as a model of living this fourth type of modernity that was executed in the mass grave, because these people were Yugoslav Muslims, right? A Yugoslav Muslim is executed, goes into the mass grave. It is put together, reassociated, and buried as a what? As a Bosniak Islamic subject, dead body. So now, in this neat chain of equivalences, you know, Yugoslav Muslim gets executed, you know, goes into the mass grave, gets excavated, and then is a Bosniak, you know, Islamic Bosniak, a lot is lost, you know. And then the question is then to unpick why this only political people without the country. The country of Yugoslav Muslim was Yugoslavia, right? It wasn't Serbia, it wasn't Croatia, it wasn't just Bosnia. Yes, they were dominant in Bosnia, but that's why Bosnia was the site of horror. But it was everywhere. It was unmoored from the logic of the nation and the country, the ethnic, you know, the ethnic substance inscribed in the soil for them, which you have to, you know, get murdered for thousands of years to ensure, you know, the continuation of your ethnic group.
I'm Ljubica Stanivuk. I'm from Bosnia, from Livno, Beograd, in New York City. And I would just maybe try to end of this, that Godard said that Europe died in Sarajevo. But I think as I am crazy as all Bosnian, I think that Godard also said something about European Union about Greece. And I in the larger picture, can see how Europe died in Sarajevo and how Europe economical or whatever will die in Greece. That's it, always. And already thank died. You very much.
Hello, Seka.
Ciao.
Ciao.
Anybody else?
Thank you very Thank you. Much, Milica, Damir, and Branislav. This was a fascinating, a fascinating discussion. Trša. And once again, thank you very much for a fantastic presentation.
Thank you.